بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله. Alhamdulillah, we're making progress in the series we began, covering the different things that were said and done, the different incidents that took place from the time that Abu Abdullah al-Hussein was forced to give bay'ah, or they attempted to force him to give bay'ah, all the way to Karbala. Covering these different stories, different sayings of him. The reason being, as I've said before, there are a lot of different interpretations of Ashura. There are a lot of different ways that people look at them. Ulama even have looked at Ashura. And for you and I, the best thing to do, even if we're going to follow our ulama, when we see that there's a difference of opinion there, or there's a difference of opinion amongst people regarding his movement, is to at least have an understanding of the main points he made and he tried to make as he made his way towards Karbala. Without a doubt, if anyone starts a movement, whatever they say and do, since the conception of that movement, whatever they say is going to have significance in understanding why they're doing what they're doing. And that's what we're trying to do these nights. So go over what Abu Abdullah said, did, how he dealt with people, and what lessons we can take from him, so that inshallah, if we are following his footsteps, we can be sure that we are following his footsteps. Recite a salawat. One of my favorite ones is what we're going to cover tonight. So far, most of the sayings, most of the dialogues of Imam Hussein that we covered were very famous. This one isn't as famous, but it's important in the sense that it illustrates what he had in mind regarding how public what he's doing is going to be. When the letter came from Sham that, hey, get bay'ah from Imam Hussein, in that letter there were two other names as well. Two other names, two other heavyweights that Yazid wanted to make sure he has their bay'ah too. For different reasons, maybe. Number one, because when you have the bay'ah of the main individuals, the rest will follow. One. Two, when you have their bay'ah, you don't have to worry too much about them revolting against you. Okay, he's on my side. So what happens is, in that letter that comes from Sham that says, get bay'ah from Imam Hussein, there are two more names there. That bay'ah has to be gotten from them as well. Number one, Abdullah bin Zubair. We alluded to him a few nights ago. And inshallah, we have a dialogue between him and Imam Hussein that we'll cover later, a few nights down, inshallah. So I'm not going to cover him yet. I'm not going to explain who he was and introduce him. And there's another one by the name of Abdullah bin Umar, the son of the second Khalifa, Umar ibn al-Khattab. These two individuals, they are controversial in the Shia faith. There is criticism there. Just like the Shia will criticize anyone, unless they are ma'soom. If you're ma'soom, you're not criticized. But if you're ma'soom, if you are ma'soom, you're not criticized by the Shia. But if you're not ma'soom, yes, you can be questioned. Things that you do can be questioned. This is how we see things. Abdullah bin Zubair, if you remember, those of you who were here the first lecture, he was sitting with Imam Hussein, they say, when the messenger came to Imam Hussein asking that you have been summoned to the palace of the Emir. So come, and the Emir wants to talk to you about something. And if you remember, that's when Imam Hussein told him that looks like Muawiyah is dead. That's why they're summoning me to the palace. This Abdullah bin Zubair, he finds out about what's going on. Abdullah bin Zubayr was a person that was after becoming Khalifa himself, as you shall see, we'll cover later. And so he's not the one to give bay'ah to anybody. Who's Yazid for me to give bay'ah to him? Abdullah bin Zubayr is significant in the history of Islam. He has played major roles in some of the most sensitive situations. And now he believes to be a person worthy for Khilafah. I'm not going to give my bay'ah to someone like Yazid, this little kid, this rookie. I deserve to be Khalifa. So what does he do? Instead of going to the Khalifa and giving him bay'ah, when he finds out about this, he leaves Medina discreetly. Maybe overnight, he takes a route that usually is not taken. You know, sometimes you have the highway, sometimes you got the service road. No one takes the service road. Why? The service road had red lights in it. It has red lights. No one wants to stand behind red lights. Sometimes this happens to me personally. I have to drop my daughter off at school. You get stuck in rush hour, right? You look at the service road. Everyone's going fast on it. The highway is blocked with traffic, right? What do? You're tempted. Eventually you go in the service road, but then you get stuck behind one of those red lights. And then all those guys that were behind you in traffic on the main highway, they fall ahead of you. That's life. Abdullah bin Zubayr, he takes another route, they say. No one finds out where he is. Before you know it, Abdullah bin Zubayr is gone, out of Medina. They can't get bay'ah from him. He's in Mecca. But now let's go back to Imam Hussein. We're getting closer and closer to the departure of Abu Abdullah. Actually, this is the last saying that we're going to cover about Imam Hussein that he said in Medina before he left. And it's happening while he's leaving. One of his companions suggests to him that, okay, Imam Hussein, you know that they want bay'ah from you or death. You didn't give bay'ah. So you can be pretty sure that they're after your life now. So don't you think it's better now that we are leaving Medina that we don't take the main route? Let's take the other route. Let's take a route where we're pretty sure they're not going to follow us. Here Imam Hussein says one line which also reveals that there was something going on in Imam Hussein's mind. That the result that he's after lies in him, no, taking actually the main route between Mecca and Medina. He says, La wallah, no by Allah. La ufariquhu, I'm not going to move away from this main route, this main road to Mecca. Hatta yaqdi Allahu ma huwa qadin, until Allah judges and Allah's decree happens. Now, Imam Hussein knows that in the end, it's death. When is it? How is it? He says, I don't care. I'm going to take the main route. What I know is if I'm doing this, I have to make the most noise. If I take the side route, no one's going to know that I left. No one's going to know that I'm on the way there. I want to make sure this journey, everyone knows about it. So right here, someone will understand. Okay, so it wasn't just, for example, that Imam Hussein wanted to make to accomplish a political revolution necessarily. If you want to overthrow somebody, if you want to stage a coup, what do? You let everybody know beforehand, hey people, look at me. I'm going against the Khalifa of my time. I didn't give him bay'ah. Oh, and this is the road I'm going to be on, just in case, you know, you want to get rid of me. These things help us understand what was going on. No one's ruling out political revolution either. But it shows that there was more to it than just that. And I've noticed that in this ashra that we're in right now, speakers around, they're also speaking about this, trying to break down what exactly was in the mind of Abu Abdullah. It's interesting. For some of us, it's very clear. But when we look at the different things that Imam Hussein did, we find out that maybe it wasn't just one objective. There were many objectives. One person says, Imam Hussein was after Shahada. Another one says, he was after overthrowing Yazid. Another one says, he did this to, he died for our sins. So on and so forth. These are famous opinions that are out there, have been said throughout history. Then you'll have thinkers who will say, maybe it was a lot of these, not just one. Why do we want to isolate one reason? What is your reason that it's not just one, it's more than one? Because of all the different things Imam Hussein did. Yes, if he can take power, he'll take power. He sent Muslim al-Aqil to Kufa, and he said, get bay'ah from the people. So that sounds like coup. That sounds like political involvement, political power he's after. But wait a minute, if you're only after political power, revolution, why are you taking your women and children with you? And yesterday we covered this, right? Or 2 days ago. They said Allah wants to see them also captured, prisoners. And I covered why Allah wanted to see that. So maybe it's not just that. Whichever of these happens, if Kufans are loyal to their allegiance to me, and they're loyal to me, all the better. We will take power. If not, and I become shaheed, I'm going to make sure that I make noise as I go. Brothers and sisters, there's a lot going on in the movement of Imam Hussein. Every person, it's so beautiful. Every person will take away to the amount of the capacity that they have. One person will take away that I'm going to be a better person in life. One person will say, when there are struggles, I'm going to be patient because Imam Hussein taught me that. Another person will take away something else, and so on and so forth. It's beautiful. Here, he lets us know that I want to make as much noise. If Imam Hussein wasn't after this, then he wouldn't have sent his companions one by one to be killed. Our ulama tell us this. They say Imam Hussein wrote a book for history. And he wanted as many pages as he could put into this book. He wanted this book to be full of details. He could have told his army to go and fight all at once. And everyone would have been killed. And martyrdom would have been achieved. What did he do? He prolonged it as much as he could. Added to the tragedy as much as he could. What was he after? Only political revolution? There was a lot of things he had in mind. There were a lot of things. Did he have to take his baby out? Did he have to send Qasim, a young kid, to the battlefield? One by one? Because when you all attack at once, you might be able to do more damage than one person going out there and everyone surrounding them. But he prolonged this day. What was he after? That's Abdullah bin Zubair. That's Abu Abdullah. What do I take from this? What I take from this is that if my duty is to make noise, I'm not going to back down. Right? Imam Hussein knows this is the plan of Allah. This is how it has to be executed. He's not going to save his life now, protect himself. He says, no. La wallah. I'm going to take this route because this route accomplishes what my Lord is after. We want to get exposure. We want people to know what's going on. This is our media. The third person on the list, you might ask, what about Abdullah bin Umar ibn al-Khattab? What was he up to? Even before all of this, they say he was in Mecca performing Umrah anyway. So you see, the only person that was really there and made noise was Imam Hussein alayhi salam from Medina and as he leaves. Now, it says he goes out. Before I go on, this is something very important, brothers and sisters here. We have a hadith, أَفْضَلُ الْأَعْمَالِ أَحْمَزُهَا. The best of deeds is the hardest of deeds. For example, if I am fasting in the month of Ramadan in Texas on a hot summer day, it's different than in 2018, it's different than a person who might be fasting in Australia in 2018 because, you know, our summers are winter over there. The thawab that I get might be more. Might. I don't want to, you know, do God's job here, okay? But the hadith says if it's harder, you'll get more thawab. Of course, it makes sense. Some people take this a little too far. Some people take this as far as thinking that the only way their amal is going to be accepted is to just make it the hardest possible. Sometimes the duty, the responsibility, is to keep it discreet. Sometimes the responsibility is to make noise. Now Imam Hussein, his story, he has to make noise, he makes noise. But there are tens of cases where companions of our imams were making noise. The imam says, hey, what's up? What's going on? Why are you making so much noise? What are you trying to do? Get yourself killed? So both sides of the extreme in this spectrum have to be careful. Some people think that they're not supposed to make noise at all, ever. That's not true necessarily. It depends on the situation. It depends on your responsibility. Some people think that the only way that it's accepted is to make as much noise as possible. That's not. Sometimes they say if you're too courageous, it borders on dumbness. It's not being courageous anymore. It's being dumb. We have to figure out, and this is the hard part a little bit, we have to figure out what our responsibility is and carry it out accordingly. Sometimes you keep it discreet. Sometimes you make noise. Sometimes you put yourself out there. Sometimes you don't put yourself out there. This mentality, it's okay. I mean, the brothers and sisters, usually people will look at things black and white. That's just how it is. Either this or not, the other way. You're on this side, you're on that side. No, it's not always like that. There's a lot of gray area when it comes to Islam and identifying responsibilities. We have to understand that as well. So a person who reads this can't necessarily say, you see, Imam Hussein said, I'm going to take the route that's going to be as public as possible and give me as much exposure and make as much noise. So that means that every time I want to do something for Islam, I have to make sure I do it like that. Not necessarily. Maybe yes, maybe no. Depends on the situation. We have to be smarter, brothers and sisters. We have to be smarter. As the Imam leaves Medina, he recites this verse. Surah Qasas, verse 21. The same verse that talks about Prophet Musa when he left his city. After he had punched that guy and that guy had died, the Quran tells us. فَلَمَّا وَكَزَهُ He punched somebody and he died. That person deserved to die, of course. But apparently Prophet Musa didn't want to kill him. That got him in trouble. They came after him. He had no choice but to leave his city. As he left, the Quran says, فَخَرَجَ مِنْهَا خَائِفًا يَتَرَقَّبْ That Prophet Musa, after he got in trouble like that, he left. He left his city. خَائِفًا While he was fearful for his life. يَتَرَقَّبْ You know, anticipating, you know, stuff might go down. قَالَ رَبِّ نَجِّنِي مِنَ الْقَوْمِ الظَّالِمِينَ Prophet Musa, he said, Oh Allah, save me from الْقَوْمِ الظَّالِمِينَ The oppressive people. Imam Hussein, as he leaves Medina, his situation is similar. He recites this verse of the Quran. Once again, let's take inspiration here. Things that happen in our lives, it's so awesome if we know the corresponding verse that'll match our situation. Just saying. Imam Hussein is leaving Medina. He does fear for his life. In Medina, he feared for his life. In Mecca, he feared for his life. Not feared as if he fears death, feared for his life, meaning there was a chance that he was going to get killed. Anticipating, they might come and assassinate me. So this verse applies exactly to his situation. He recites this verse as he's leaving. He leaves Medina, this whole thing happens. Oh Imam, let's take that other route, the side route. He says, no, we're taking the main route. And I'm not going to leave this main route until Allah does what He wants to do. And then he enters Mecca. As you all know, he stays in Mecca for a few months. This happens around, I think, in the month of Rajab when he leaves. When he leaves Medina, it's in the month of Rajab. He leaves Mecca in the month of Dhul Hijjah. So there's like 3-4 months that he was in Mecca and then he left. So once he's entering Mecca, he recites another verse. Qasas 22. وَلَمَّا تَوَجَّهَ تِلْقَاءَ مَدْيَنَا قَالَ عَسَى رَبِّ أَن يَهْدِيَنِي سَوَاءَ السَّبِيلِ Now that he's entering Mecca, he recites the verse that continues the story of Prophet Musa. That when Prophet Musa reached the city of Madian, and he was directed towards the city of Madian, what did he say? قَالَ عَسَى رَبِّ أَن يَهْدِيَنِي InshaAllah, Allah is going to guide me to the right path of what I have to do. He also says that this is the next thing on the list. Check mark. The to-do list was what? Step one, no bay'ah. Step two, leave Medina. Check. Step three, he figured that the best place to go is Mecca. The sanctuary of Allah. Where people are coming and going. Dhul Hijjah is going to come in a few months. More people are going to come. I can get more exposure. I can spread the message even more. Step three, check. Entered Mecca. Remember, I said this a few days ago as well. Brothers and sisters, Leave the results to Allah. Figure out what the next step is and just do it. We got a campaign going, right? Figure out the next step, just do it. That's what Imam Hussein, what I learned from him personally. Do I have to necessarily, from the start, say this was his goal, this was his goal, this was his goal? Yes, he has divine knowledge. That's another story. But what he's teaching me is that, look, this was the first, I can't give bay'ah, so I'm not going to give bay'ah. They're going to kill me. I got to get out of Medina. I got to go somewhere. Let me figure out where the best place to go is. Mecca. Let's go to Mecca. That's what it's all about. It's not, Islam isn't too hard. Just figure out what we have to do and do it. So he teaches us that we're not after protecting ourselves. If Islam needs to be protected, I'll take the main route. That's one story. Let's move on. After he enters Mecca, he meets with Abdullah bin Umar, one of those three that Yazid said, I want bay'ah from them. Now, Abdullah bin Umar apparently had not given bay'ah. We'll talk about that too, inshallah, if time allows. Abu Abdullah has a dialogue with Abdullah bin Umar in Mecca. As I said, he was performing Umrah even before all of this happened. Abdullah bin Umar. Abdullah bin Umar tells him, and this is in Khwarizmi, in the Maqtal of Khwarizmi, he says, O Abu Abdullah, since the people have given their bay'ah to this man, Yazid, so it shows that he doesn't care too much about him, this man. He could have said to Yazid bin Muawiyah, hafidhahullah, Allah yahifdha. But he didn't say that. He said to this man, this guy, Azzalami, you know, as you guys say. And he is like, he has all the dirhams and dinars, then naturally they will all be inclined towards him. The people, that's how they think. They'll be inclined towards him and his ideology of hate for your family. I fear that if you oppose him, that you and a group of the Muslims will be killed. Of course. And I have heard from the Prophet of God. I want you guys to pay attention to this part. I, Abdullah bin Umar says, have heard from the Messenger of God. Okay, so he had seen him in his lifetime, which makes him a Sahabi. Remember that. He is one of the Sahaba. I heard from the Prophet of God that he said, Hussein will be killed, and if the people do not aid him, they will suffer from lowliness and abasement from that. To be abased means to be lowly, to go to a low level. What is your suggestion, Abdullah bin Umar? Okay, this is all the stuff you said so far, we all knew. Abu Abdullah knows. What is your suggestion? Muhammad bin Hanafiya gave his suggestions in Medina. You give your suggestion. What is it? Abdullah bin Umar, a Sahabi, this is what he says. He says, give allegiance to Yazid and be at peace with him, just like everyone else, status quo. And refrain from having the blood of the Muslims spilled. Okay, that is a good cause, to avoid the spilling of the blood of the Muslims. Sometimes something that is not as important is going to be compromised, but in return, we are going to save the lives of the Muslims. That's good. That's very honorable. Sometimes the whole reason why mankind was created, and the whole reason me and you are breathing today, which is Islam, which is Tawheed, which is the religion and faith, whether it's during our Prophet's time, after our Prophet, before our Prophet, in the form of the Christianity of Prophet Isa, or in the form of the Judaism of Prophet Musa. Please note, I add this clause, of Prophet Musa and of Prophet Isa. That if that the purpose of our creation, which is these faiths and religions, if they're going to be wiped out, then it's going to be a little different, as we all know and can guess. If we have to choose between eating haram food or saving my life, you're stuck in the desert, all you got is haram Outback Steakhouse. You're stuck in the desert, you're like, okay, do I save my life? Or do I lose my life but stay away from haram? Yeah? I think it's very obvious. We'll go for that other one, alhamdulillah. We'll go for the other one. We'll go for the haram food, because now this haram food became wajib on me to eat it, because it's going to save my life. Because the life holds more value and significance than just, you know, a haram ribeye steak or something. But then there's sometimes, instead of the steak, you got something else. You got Islam itself. And then you got life. Well, all this life was for Islam. In other words, if there is no Islam, there's no point in creation. God might as well just wipe all of creation out. Have you heard how when Imam Hussein was killed in the afternoon of Ashura, how the skies turned red all of a sudden, and people thought, like, it's over. Like, God is going to just roll up creation and just get rid of it. It's not worth it anymore. We've heard about that, right? If Islam doesn't exist, if the Hujjah of Allah doesn't exist, then there's no point in creation. In these cases, loss of life, there's no choice. It's not that it's the primary default of Islam, but I mean, there's no choice, as I covered before. In these situations, loss of life is okay, is wajib, as a matter of fact, if that's the only way to preserve Islam. So here, the argument is, don't let blood be spilled. Well, if this argument was valid, this argument would also hold against Ali ibn Abi Talib in the three civil wars that were imposed on him. But he still fought those battles. He could have sat aside and said, you know what? Let's just be peaceful and, you know, not allow lives to be lost. Lots of lives were lost. But he knew if the reins of Islam fall in the hands of someone like Muawiyah, it's over. And you can see that it was over. 20 years he worked on the people. Islam was getting weaker and weaker. And then Yazid comes and Imam Hussein has no choice but to do what he did. That's the only way left. It shows how bad and dire the situation got. That's why Amir al-Mu'mineen, he tried to fight and tried to stop Muawiyah. Okay, so this argument is flawed. Let's move on. There's some other problems here too. He said to him, to Abdullah bin Umar, the Imam's reply is, O Abu Abdurrahman, that was his laqab, that was his kunya, excuse me. O Abu Abdurrahman, O Umar ibn Abdullah bin Umar, O son of Umar ibn al-Khattab, do you not know that this world is so low and abased that the head of Prophet Yahya was taken, Prophet Yahya, son of Zakariya, was taken as a gift to a fornicating woman of the Bani Israel. She wanted that as her dowry, maybe, I don't know. Someone actually did that to get her. I don't know if you've heard, they say that he was hiding in the trunk of a tree. And that's where they found him, and they sawed his head off. He says, this is how low this dunya that we're in and clinging to is. Something like this happens in it. In Jannah, things like this don't happen. In the realm of the angels, things like this don't happen. It's in this world. It shows the lowliness of this world. Do you not know that the Bani Israel used to kill 70 prophets between dawn and sunrise? And then would sit in their shops in the marketplace as if they hadn't done anything wrong. And yet Allah didn't punish them right away. But they eventually were punished and taken revenge from by Allah. Fear Allah, O Abu Abdurrahman, and don't refrain from aiding me. Stick to me. It looks like Imam Hussein is able to pinpoint where the issue is in this individual. He's telling him, I want to spare the lives. I want the lives of the Muslims to be spared. No blood to be shed. Imam Hussein, what does he talk about? He talks about how bad the dunya is. And how, hey, you better aid me. In other words, all of this stuff is justification. And you trying to get out of accompanying me from here on. You don't want to give up this dunya. You don't want to give up your life. And throughout his Abdullah bin Umar's life, you see that, yeah, he was clinging to this dunya, to his life. On multiple occasions, how low he would go to preserve his own life. So what happens here? Imam Hussein lets him know that first of all, what's your argument? I'm not even going to answer your argument of, oh, lives should be spared. Islam is on the verge of destruction. And two, I'm letting you know what your problem is. Three, you have to aid me. What does he say now? So in other words, hey, I'm not going to do what you're telling me of give bay'ah to Yazid for sure. What does he say? It says that it was here that Ibn Umar, Abdullah bin Umar, wept and kissed the chest of the Imam and said, I entrust you to Allah and bid you farewell, for you will be killed on this journey. So now when we listen to this, we say, good for him that he wept for Imam Hussein. Isn't it awesome that we weep for Imam Hussein? He also wept for Imam Hussein. Brothers and sisters, is that all? You know Imam Hussein is going to be killed. And you're just going to let him go? Just like that? But to make it even better, I mean, you're going to cry for him. You're going to kiss him on his forehead or on his chest. But you're going to let the last of the five members of the cloak just go just like that? When you know that he's going to die and he's telling you to aid him? Sometimes we get caught up, not we, but others get caught up in like the emotional side of things. Baba, Imam Hussein is leaving. Oh, Imam Hussein, I'm so upset that you're going. Just go sooner. That's what happens when we cling a little too much. Certain things are important for us. Yes, it's very controversial. Now, I don't want to scold him, brothers and sisters, because I personally know for a fact myself that I struggle too. I struggle if I get the feeling that if one day comes that I have to, you know, make a decision like this, I'll be another one of these people. I really do. Let me give you an example. I'm going to end with this example. That when you go on that stage, that bodybuilding stage, right? And I always use this example. Some of you have heard it before. If you want to be toned, if you want to be in shape, if you want to take the trophy in this body on this bodybuilding tournament, you have to have pumped a lot of weight before going up on stage, right? These Olympians, what do? They pick up that heavy weight, right? Well, before that, they're doing a lot of lighter weights and also heavier weights to get ready for that heavy weight on stage in the Olympics. Brothers and sisters, if we haven't practiced, if we haven't practiced throughout our daily lives, this is super important. Like everything I said so far, just, okay, that's good. I mean, Sheikh Amin said it, so it's probably good. So just, you know, that. But this is super important, people. If throughout our daily lives, these little wajib and harams that keep coming up, whether it's something that I want to listen to, I want to look at, I want to say, whatever it is, I want to do, these little ones that keep coming up, if I practice with these little weights, then when the bigger weights come, I already know how it works when it comes to making the right decision. I have spiritual muscle memory. Have you noticed some people, they don't play basketball for 20 years, but since they played when they were 10, they can still ball. But a 20-year-old who's never played before, they can't play at all. I've seen it happen all the time. The guy's 30 years old, he should be ashamed of himself. He can't play ball. I'm just kidding. Muscle memory, I want to use that here. If throughout the day in my daily life, I am practicing a little bit, like this haram comes up, okay, this haram, staying away from it. Let's move on. La bayk ya Hussein, let's go. And I've practiced it enough, it becomes second nature. Second nature in the sense that I know how to do this. When something bigger comes up, I'm ready for it. This is a wrong way of looking at things that, okay, look, these little things that come up, those aren't that important. When the big things come up, la bayk ya Hussein. Oh, that inshallah we will say Labbaik Ya Hussein then, but throughout these 364 days of the year, we better be saying Labbaik Ya Hussein in those little things, so that on that day of Ashura when we say it, we really mean it. I say this all the time. If I want Hubb al-Dunya to slowly leave my heart, I can't just sit there and be like, I hate dunya, I hate dunya, I hate dunya, right? I can't. I have to teach myself that. I have to train myself. How do I train myself? Whenever things that I'm not supposed to do, hear, see, come up, I just stay away from them. Slowly, dunya isn't the most important thing, because if it was, I would do those things. Apparently, someone else is more important. Practically, I'm teaching myself that dunya isn't the most important thing, because I stay away from some of it. I don't just let myself have whatever of it I want. No, something else is more important. I keep telling myself this. Not by dhikr, dunya is bad, dunya is bad, dunya is bad. No. Practical remembrance. That's what these wajib and harams in our daily lives are all about. And having said that, I'm going to transition into a couple minutes. Inshallah, from tonight, I want to, you know, share some stories or some thoughts regarding the theme, which is a very sacred, I think, theme that we have. Very noble. Of do not despair. Yeah. That's what shaitan wants to use against us. That's like one of his last tools that he really can use. That's his secret weapon. That he can make us despair. I want to talk about one thing tonight. Brothers and sisters, we grow up going to whatever it is, Sunday school, Saturday school, Islamic school, majalis, lectures, classes, all of these things that where they'll teach us things, right? And then in these sessions, lots of times, I mean, I see it a lot. I was a kid once. Yes, sheikhs are also kids. They can be kids and then they grow up to become sheikhs, yes? As a kid, I always had this feeling of God is after me. Inna rabbaka labil mirsad. Allah is waiting to ambush. Just waiting for you to do something wrong. He wants to kill you, man. Jahannam, he wants to make sure Jahannam doesn't go to waste. He needs people in there. Unfortunately, this is the notion. This is the vibe that we get sometimes. And slowly it reaches a point where we start losing hope. We're like, you know what? It's not even worth it. We take up this perfectionist mentality that either everything or nothing. I'm not perfect. I mess up. So why even bother? Because God is going to, you know, He's got the torch ready. That's something that slowly over the years, sometimes even parents might use this. Whether that's right or wrong, that's up to them to figure out. But if the kid is being naughty, say, they tell them, don't do that. You go to Jahannam. I've seen it, brothers and sisters. I've seen this. Or an auntie says, don't do that. You go to Jahannam. Slowly, Jahannam becomes the ultimate destination, whether you like it or not. And then we slowly despair. We slowly lose hope. We slowly let go. So this is what happens sometimes in all these majalis or classes and Sunday schools maybe, and so on. I don't want to undermine any of it. May Allah bless the ones who are trying their best to educate our youth. But I want to make a point here. When it comes to these things, we go to our maraji, our great ulama. And when you go in their books, I'm going to share with you Ayatollah Sistani. May Allah prolong his life and give him health. Right in the beginning of his book, Minhaj al-Salihin, which is a book of fatawa, it's a book of, hey, this is how you pray, this is how you fast, and so on. In the beginning of his book, in the intro part, he lists lots of the major sins. And it's not a bad idea to go through those ones, you know? The book is in Arabic, of course. I don't think it's been translated. Anyway, in there, he's listing all the great sins. Number one, what is it? Ash-shirku billah. Ash-shirk billah. Because I don't even know if we can call that a sin. Because when you do shirk, you've exited the religion. You don't have religion to begin with anymore. I believe in 10 gods. Okay, but you're still Muslim? No, I don't think you're Muslim. Islam is gone. So I don't even know if we can call it a sin necessarily. But anyway, that's something to discuss. Number two on the list, what is it? Adultery? I don't know, lying? Cheating? What is it? The Outback Steakhouse thing I was talking about, what is it? Number two on the list, oh my God, makes me happy, I don't know about y'all, is al-ya'su min rahmatillah, al-ya'su min rahmatillah. To lose hope in Allah's mercy. But, oh Allah, I've done all these bad things, and this should be a reason for me to lose hope. Yeah, they should be a reason for you to lose hope, but you're not allowed to lose hope. That's how great and grand His mercy is. Yeah, you're being fair. I deserve to lose hope. You deserve to? Yeah, true. But Allah doesn't look at things like that. If it was the case that you commit some sins, even if they're big sins, that it's over, then all of us would be headed in one direction, that ultimate destination that I said, Jahannam. That's not how it works, brothers and sisters. He wants to let us know that, hey, if you fall, you get back up. There's this cool hadith, and I'm going to end with this hadith. Two or three words, I think it is. That's it. The ma'asum, he says, إِذَا أَسَأْتَ فَأَحْسِن. Hey, when you mess up and do something wrong, you do something bad, lose hope? No. Do something good after it. That's the purpose you were created for. Sometimes I might hit the ground, but me hitting the ground concludes and results in me getting up and being stronger. I'll take a lesson from that. I'll think that situation, or I'll be like, next time when this situation happens, when my mom or dad says something like this to me, you know what, I'll just leave the room instead of saying something back. I'll think it over next time when shaitan comes with me at this, with this. When he comes at me with this, I know exactly what to do. I'm stronger now. إِذَا أَسَأْتَ فَأَحْسِن. You were created to do good. All right, you did some bad. Does that mean you still don't have to do good? No, no. Do good, it'll wipe out the bad. I made my mom or dad upset. Okay, we'll make it up. Very simple. I'm sorry. I'm going to try my best not to do it anymore. These types of things show us that, okay, we hear all of this stuff from people sometimes, that hey, Jahannam is the ultimate destination, as if. But this is the people looking at God the way they would have been if they were God. That's not how God is, though. Number two on the list, brothers and sisters, is you don't lose hope in Allah's mercy after shirk billah. This illustrates to us, for us, how great the mercy of Allah is, that we're not allowed to lose hope in it. Sometimes something tiny, there's a little bit of mercy. They say, hey, it's haram to lose hope in this little thing. That doesn't make sense. The only time it can be number two on the list is if this mercy is the vastest of all things. If there's a thing out there, mercy will be bigger than it. And that's what the Quran says. وَسِعَتْ رَحْمَتِي كُلَّ شَيْءٍ. My rahmah and mercy has encompassed all things. If you can call it a thing, the mercy of Allah is greater than it. أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله صلوات.